Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Not even a life-altering explosion can stop a hero during difficult times. Attend the opening ceremony at Firehouse World in February 2011 to hear Marine Corporal Joshua Blyle share about a bombing in Iraq that took both his legs. You'll leave motivated to face whatever challenges may come your way when you're out on your next call. Get complete details at firehouseworld.com.
Welcome to the Leader's Toolbox on firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway, and today I have assembled a panel of guests as we are going to talk about fire service reputation management. The Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firemen's Association authored a white paper on the topic of fire service reputation management, and the paper deals with many of the issues that fire departments are facing in misbehavior of members and the impact of that on the department and then on the fire service in general. And today, as my guests, I have Steve Austin from the Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firemen's Association. Steve was instrumental in the development of the white paper. And I have Billy Hayes, who is the Director of Military, Corporate, and Special Programs at Columbia Southern University, and previously was with the Washington, D.C. Fire Department in Public Relations, I believe, but I'll let him correct me if I got that wrong. And Chad Weinstein is a PhD consultant trainer for fire departments, and he runs an organization called Ethical Leaders in Action. And Chad is going to share his perspective on the challenges and the opportunities in ethical leadership. So welcome to all three of you to the Leader's Toolbox.
Good to be with you.
Then we're going to start out with Steve Austin giving us the kind of the history of how the Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firemen's Association came to develop or write a fire service reputation management white paper. Go ahead, Steve.
Thanks, Rich, and good morning, everyone. I should take a moment or two just to tell a little bit about who the CVVFA is. We're a 110-year-old fire service organization founded in the Mid-Atlantic area for the purposes of mutual aid way back in 1901. And our role there was to actually load steam pumpers and hand-drawn fire apparatus onto rail cars and move it back and forth along the old Cumberland Valley Railroad in the event of large fires, and to standardize hose couplings. And we've come a long way since then. Many of the listeners know us from our work on highway incident scene safety through our website, respondersafety.com. We're guys that take on tough issues and put them out in front of the fire service and the public, and try to take some affirmative action about some of the problems that are out there. A group of our leaders about 3 years ago said to us that they were concerned about some of the actions of a very small group of members of the fire service, a very, very small minority of fire service members, that because of their actions, either immoral, sometimes illegal, and just plain wrong, they believe that there was an erosion of the high moral ground that the fire service has enjoyed in our country for even in pre-colonial times. And after some discussion about that, we decided as an association that we would assemble a team of experts and sit down and try to analyze the problems of the fire service reputation, what we could do about managing that reputation, and getting an awareness level to fire service leaders and to the grassroots, the firefighters themselves, to address some of this behavior. We also pointed out, of course, what we believe is happening because of this poor behavior in the terms of this erosion of the high moral ground, and also why that's happening. And basically, it's happening for several reasons. There's probably been some of this that has gone on in the past, but because of the mass communications, the internet, obviously the 24-hour news cycle. When people have the opportunity to get and find out more that's what's going on around them, some of this behavior gets published and transmitted in much greater frequency than it had ever in the past. Now, I want to emphasize that this is a small group of folks in the fire service that are doing this. This is certainly not any kind of indictment on the broader fire service, responsible men and women of America's fire service that have worked so hard to serve others and in dangerous conditions. What we did was assemble a team of folks that we believe that could help us identify some of these problems. We met at St. Joseph's University almost 3 years ago, and began to take a look at several of the areas, such as firefighter arson, misuse of funds within fire departments, volunteer associations, union locals, and what have you. Misuse of equipment and facilities, misuse of alcohol and illegal substances, harassment and discrimination, and one that is very interesting to us was cheating on qualifying exams. That's just a handful of poor behavior that's been giving us some problems across the country. We continued to work and refine, and met again at the National Fire Academy, and we produced this our white paper, very easy to read paper, about 16 pages long, called Fire Service Reputation Management White Paper. We've published that. It's gotten a pretty good discussion out through the fire service. So we're indebted to firehouse.com for the work they've done with us to get that paper out there. We'll be talking a little bit later about some of the communication areas that we're going to take the paper in the future. We're very fortunate to have the last two United States fire administrators participate in this exercise. Fire Administrator Chief Greg Cade was part of the panel, and our former fire administrator Kelvin Cochran wrote the introduction that's inside the front cover. This white paper is available for free. It's published on the Cumberland Valley website, and then in a brand new website that we've just launched, firefighterbehavior.com.
Okay. Thanks, Steve, for the intro and the background. Dr. Weinstein, what are some of the things that happen when a fire department isn't dialed in and have ethical challenges? How does that affect the whole organization?
Well, it's a great question, and I would like to begin by saying that this white paper is a spectacular piece of work. It especially does a great job articulating the categories of problems that have historically arisen that have led to, at a national level, the potential for a degradation in reputation for a group of professionals who have enjoyed a sterling, indeed a hero's reputation nationwide, But locally, as your question suggests, these problems, when they arise, have very real implications for local agencies. Immediately, when leaders in a fire service or members of an organization reveal through their actions that organization has problems, well, that affects that organization's ability to respond to calls, to get the kind of public cooperation required to do their mission. At a broader level, it can undermine public officials' confidence in funding agencies the way they need to be funded to remain ready and carry on those missions. And frankly, particularly for paid-on-call departments, it can affect an agency's ability to recruit the best candidate. So an ethical problem, if it's not addressed properly, can ripple through an agency and really harm it for a long time to come.
Yeah, that's a great point. The impact is really much broader than just the individual who's misbehaving. It has political implications, community implications, and I suspect there are some listeners who might say our organization is sterling. You know, we've got good people that do the right thing, and there are many, as Steve said, there are many who are doing all the right things, and a very few small group who are misbehaving. But when something like that happens and it hits the headline, it can happen in a completely different part of the state or in another state and still have an impact on your organization, right, Chad?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and in fact, as the paper points out, and given the prevalence of mass media, that impact is faster, stronger, and more profound than ever before because everybody can see everything, and there just simply isn't the time that there used to be to craft messages and to respond publicly in ways that will offset the Internet's power, basically, and the 24-hour media's power to influence public opinion. One mistake hits hard immediately and will have lasting implications.
Chad, do you think that there's a risk for us to be guilty by association? In other words, that people, that there might be some who say your profession as a whole is tainted, or not tainted, but is struggling for the right way to ask this, but is it possible that there would be people who would say, oh, you're a firefighter. I hear, you know, they try to take advantage of, as Steve said, the pension system, and have the community turn against us because of these things that are happening?
Well, it's certainly a potential, particularly in this political climate where people are very angry about public expenditures of all kinds. And so it's a complicated message to say that, look, we do need to be funded in order to maintain readiness and pursue our mission. Now, I would say that there's a positive side to this as well, and that is these challenges present progressive fire departments, all fire departments, with an opportunity to build that public perception through all that you or we do. And I have to say, although your introduction indicated, I'd be explicit, I'm the outsider here. I am not a fire service professional, though I work with fire departments, and I'm one of the people who thinks that you are heroes. I mean, certainly a couple of knuckleheads too, but heroes. And the work that you do is enormously valuable locally and nationally. So there is an opportunity for fire departments to be very clear and very explicit about the fire prevention work that you do, about the education work that you do, about all the other aspects of public safety that you promote in addition to fire suppression, so that when mistakes happen, they happen within a broader context of a public that is aware of the enormous service that the fire service brings to them. So we can't we can prevent some but not all of the problems that arise that threaten reputation, but we can absolutely make sure that when those problems arise, we have built the public capital, the opinion capital necessary to weather that storm by being very clear and very intentional and really excellent in all that we do around public safety.
Great, great perspective. I'm gonna do a play on words of what you just said when we talk about building the capital. Let's switch over to Billy Hayes and talk about life in the capital city. Billy, you when you were in D.C., there was a great deal of focus on trying to build an organization's reputation to be positive, and there were some hiccups. There were some things that were headline makers. How did you guys approach this and deal with this?
I want to agree with a lot of what Chad said in regards to the speed of the media, and specifically in D.C. It was truly unique in the 2 years I served there, coming from being a chief in the Atlanta area. The Atlanta media market was somewhat different, and even the explosion of social media in the last couple of years did not play that much into what I saw in that media market versus coming to Washington. Building a reputation for the nation's capital fire department is no easy task, regardless of which fire chief is in there. And I know there's a lot of information out on the internet about the transitions of administrations now. But regardless of whoever the chief is, it's no easy task. You're always under the microscope. You're always under scrutiny. There's always going to be people casting stones at you from every direction, whether it be from the public, whether it be from the elected officials, or whether it be from the internal members. One thing that we struggled with is, regardless of the positive things we were doing and trying to be ahead of the story and being proactive, it seemed that one little blip on the radar of negativity overshadowed everything we did positive. When you have members that act out, and then you have members internally who broadcast that information to the media has the story, somewhat in D.C., you're almost found guilty until proven innocent on many cases. We dealt with several scenarios where we told reporters that we had the inside information. The story that they were getting was not factual, it was not correct. There's always two sides of the story that we would be happy to provide that information, and it's legally possible. And keep in mind, when you're a government entity, or in any case, you have a personnel action going on, you have legal responsibility to protect that member. You can't say just whatever you know is going on. You have to protect it for that employee's rights as well as the organization. But the negative pieces of it are already out, which starts building the public perception. So that was a real challenge. Unfortunately, those challenges, we couldn't overcome them all. And still to this day, since my departure a few months ago, they're still struggling with many of the stories and personnel actions and bad employee behavior that continues to exist. I think you could go on the internet and just pick one of the dozens that existed, and it probably happens in most organizations. You hate to say it, it's true, but then for whatever reason, it just seemed to be broadcast at a higher level in D.C. What we did work to do was, when we had an opportunity to take a negative and turn it into a positive, we tried to get ahead of the story. And understanding the media, it was a real learning experience there. Trying to get ahead of the story in D.C. is always a race against the clock, simply because of the speed that Chad alluded to. When we did have fire fatalities, we immediately responded back to that scene with a return to the scene with our Save You program to make a positive out of a tragedy. You hate to do that, but essentially you're trying to prevent another one from occurring. And we would invite the media out. I can recall on New Year's Day, the Jackson Street fire, where we lost six members in a house. Truly tragic day. We stayed out that afternoon as well as the next day with a smoke alarm event. And 1 year later, We went back to that team, did another Save You event, and also worked hard as that family rebuilt their home. We worked with Common Voices as well as local sprinkler contractors and had that house residentially sprinklered at no cost to the family or the builders for that note. And the media that showed up for that was much less than the media that would show up for a press conference on an employee acting out in bad behavior. So you have to understand the compelling seas of the media, the crisis, the conflict, the catastrophe, the corruption, the crime, and the color stories, which are warm and fuzzies, placed at the very bottom of that. And you just have to know your media market. Having a good strategy, obviously, is knowing building the relationships. But again, I want to go back to the speed of the internet. And when we talk about reputation management and the internet, it's really a shame because you can have individuals that can say and do whatever they want, and their name's always anonymous, or they come up with a created screen name, and they can make accusations, they can slur people's names, they can hurt an agency's image because they didn't like what happened to them, even though it may have been the right thing to do. And people read that across the country. And when it happens, whatever might happen in Washington, D.C. Fire Department, whatever may happen in Los Angeles Fire Department, the other side of the country is going to know about it within minutes because we're all linked in with our BlackBerries, with our instant updates and everything that goes on, and it's hard to beat that against the clock. So it's a challenge for the fire service these days because the public, you know, the one thing I would tell firefighters is the things that you say on these internets and blogs, and the things you do to hurt the fire chief that you may not like, you're hurting the agency because the public reads that stuff too, and they really take on a negative attitude towards you. I had a council member tell me recently, they said, if I want good entertainment and gossip, I'll just go to the internet and read what you firefighters are doing. So if we think that other people aren't watching what we're doing, we're really missing the mark.
Rich, this is Steve Austin.
Go ahead, Steve.
Chief Hayes brought up a really interesting point, and juxtapose the problems that he faced when he was with Washington, D.C. Fire and Rescue in a metro department that in a city, the most powerful city in the world, that had a very, very active and engaged public affairs department and professional spokespersons to speak on behalf of the fire department, and compare that to a small municipal department or a rural volunteer department that has no idea of how to deal with even the local newspaper, let alone someone as formidable as a large cable news outlet or even network people, local television or radio that come in when something goes wrong. And we discussed this in writing the white paper about the lack of any type of public relations program within many fire departments in this country, to the point that not only do some of these departments not have a media plan and don't reach out and work with local media when things are going well in anticipation that they may need this media to get their story out when something goes wrong, we actually still have numbers of departments that give the answer no comment or shut the door, we don't want you here, whatever. And, of course, you know when that happens, you're not going to be treated fairly because you haven't given your side of the story. So in this reputation management, you need an overlay of good media relations and good public affairs with a plan on how to communicate in the good times and the bad times with your local media.
That's a great point, especially trying to pre-build those relationships with the media. And I think that might be easier, Steve, in a smaller local community to build those relationships than say that, you know, the mega political world of D.C. where, you know, Billy, you were saying all those, what do you call them, the seas of media or something like that?
The six compelling C's of the media.
The six compelling C's. I think that your point's well taken, Steve. That you can build those relationships with your media locally, in a way that can pay off for you when you have a hiccup. And you know, you never know within your organization when someone's behavior is going to have the potential to become the evening's headline, for sure. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Weinstein to talk with us about some of the things that fire departments can do to build ethical leadership within the organization to try to head off the potential for some of these things to occur, you know, how to be more proactive about getting ahead of these issues. So we're going to take a break. This is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com, and I'm your host, Rich Gasway, and we're talking about fire service reputation management. We'll be back in just a moment.
Firehouse World 2011 is the largest fire service event west of the Mississippi and takes place in San Diego, California, February 26th through March 2nd. Register today at firehouseworld.com and be part of the action. You will have access to over 100 training and educational sessions, 350 exhibitors, plus network with over 7,500 firefighters from around the country. This is one event you don't want to miss.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gasway, and we are talking about fire department reputation management with Billy Hayes from Columbia Southern University, Steve Austin from the Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firemen's Association, and Dr. Chad Weinstein from Ethical Leaders in Action. Steve, are there some incidents in the news today that could serve as good examples of reputation management issues?
Rich, I wish that there were not, but unfortunately there are, and there are every day. In working with our new website, firefighterbehavior.com, we set up some pretty sophisticated searches, and today, like many days, we found a firefighter arrested from stealing from fire departments in Kentucky. A Florida firefighter arrested on domestic battery charge, a firefighter in New York that was arrested on drug charges, a firefighter in Pennsylvania arrested in connection with child sexual assaults, a volunteer firefighter in Tennessee arrested for arson, and a firefighter in South Dakota who's been convicted for driving the fire truck while drunk. These, again, in the scheme of 30,000 fire departments in the country, are certainly isolated. But as you look at those and see the geographic spread across the country, and the fact that these news articles, you know, say and mention firefighters, this is certainly eroding in those communities, if not across the country, the support for local firefighters and the good work that fire departments do.
Indeed. And it's sad to see those headlines linked to our profession. It's very, very disappointing, very disheartening. I wish they wouldn't be there. That all the news stories would be good news stories of the things that the many great things that fire departments are doing. But unfortunately, like Billy said, you know, you can do you can do 10 great things in the community and get little to no press for it at all, and then have just one thing go wrong, and you're the headline news for three straight days on it, and that's very unfortunate. Chad, do you see any issues in your work with fire departments of organizations that are in denial that either one, these issues don't exist for them, or two, that these things only happen somewhere else, they wouldn't happen in our department because maybe, you know, we vet our members with a good application process or something like that. Do you see some of those issues?
I absolutely see those issues, and psychologically, they're perfectly understandable. These are people who come together and trust one another with their lives. So it's very difficult to acknowledge the reality that if these problems are happening elsewhere, they can easily happen here. And frankly, it's a little bit like saying, you know what, I've never been in a major car accident, so there's really no reason for me to keep wearing my seatbelt. That sounds absurd, but that's the same logic that we fall into when we believe that our buddies and our subordinates and our teammates would never step out of line the way that these national headlines indicate that they can.
And what are the things that you do, Chad, to try to dial somebody in on into reality? if that's the way to word it, you know, if they're in this denial, I mean, if somebody isn't wearing their seatbelt, you know, you can show them a gruesome picture of somebody who's, you know, been killed in an accident because they weren't wearing their seatbelt. But I would guess that your tactic might be a little more humane than that. How do you get them dialed in?
Yeah, I've given up on trying to scare fire chiefs. There's a much more positive approach, and that is to get them invested in a more positive vision for what their agency can be and what it can be for its members, and particularly what that agency can be for the communities it serves and the example that it can set. And then you say, look, here's a risk factor that could trash that vision in an instant if you're not careful. And so as the chiefs here have said, you know, you can put tons of energy into building toward this spectacular vision of an agency, a department truly in pursuit of greatness, and you can lose all that ground in an instant. So, you know, my advice has become now read this white paper and now go to firefighterbehavior.com because we can see where these problems are coming from. So let's open our eyes and prepare for what could be in advance. And then set really clear standards for conduct in the department. Now, the Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firemen's Association's recommendation is a national code of conduct. I think today, these are local employees of local agencies, so there needs to be very high and clear local standards for conduct. And then, beyond those standards, which are really a floor, let's build something higher. Let's create that positive vision and a culture that insists on nothing less than excellence and that rewards people for being courageous and telling the truth and holding themselves and one another to high standards, which is very tough to do in a fire department. And then, as we've said earlier in the podcast, create a crisis response plan that addresses the internal aspects of a crisis, the press and the media, and then the fellow agencies and the other public employees involved as well, so that you know that when something happens, you have a game plan that, just as you would in any other aspect of the fire service, a game plan that you've prepared and you've trained on, and people know their roles and they're ready to execute.
Billy, what are some of the things that you guys were doing in D.C. to try to change, or not change necessarily change the culture, but maybe to improve self-responsibility for ethical behavior? I know you guys did a lot to try to get on the right side of the media. What were you doing to try to get the organization dialed in? And you can speak freely as to whether what you tried worked or not, but what were you guys doing to try to get organizationally more responsible members?
First, it comes down to accountability, and this was before I arrived on scene. Chief Rubin had begun implementing hiring practices, the correct hiring practices, with complete background checks, making sure that we were hiring the right members for the job. You mentioned culture inadvertently, and I think that's exactly what you're trying to do, is change a culture of an organization with the people that you bring into the organization. Those are, especially wanting to work for DC Fire, those are members that are going to be there for a long, long time. I mean, there's members there that are 25 years on the job and in many housing companies across the district. So making sure that they were hiring the right people for the job. Promotions, you know, there's always questions about promotion practices and preferences that are given, but putting in standards that ones must meet before they are promoted into positions of influence, accountability, putting together a discipline system that worked, and there's going to be scrutiny that follows any type of discipline system. I understand that because it's going to be fair for some. It's not going to be fair for others, depending on which side of the fence you're standing on. So it was an accountability system that DC tried to implement to make sure everything happened. So that was one of the key things that we were working on. In regards to the media, I said it earlier, is jumping out in front of the story. In some cases, when there was a story that was going to break, we knew it was going to be big, where it wasn't leaked from an internal source where we had the information, we would address it. We would go out front with it. We'd let the media know that we had an occurrence, and we held ourselves, the organization, and members accountable for it. It didn't get as much play. When the media can find the story and break the story and investigate the story, you're going to come up on the worst end of the deal. When you're out in front of it and it's putting together a good media plan, putting the right people in place to do that. And, you know, I know there'll be some that listen to this say, well, yeah, you obviously want to put a team together that's going to protect the agency and protect the chief and only say what's right. That's not true. There were things that went wrong. We knew they were wrong, and we said they were wrong. It wasn't anything we were trying to hide. It wasn't trying to protect any individual's reputation. It was just trying to protect the public perception of the agency to make them look responsible and accountable, which is what the public wants. And what members have to understand is that, you know, we have a trust that law enforcement doesn't even have. Very few people will open their door to a law enforcement officer just to come barging in their house at any time of the day or night. Whereas the fire, when people call us, we have free rein over their house. I mean, we can, in a medical emergency, we can see parts of a female or male's body that would be uncomfortable for most people, but because that's the public trust people have in what we as the fire service do. And when we have members that act out, we have agencies, and there are agencies that act out and fire chiefs that act out of line. We have to be held accountable and understand that the public trust and public perception is in jeopardy. The other piece that I would add there is that we talked about reputation management and people in denial and not getting involved. I don't think it's as much denial as it is people don't want to get involved because of the repercussions. The bully pulpit, again, I said earlier that people can get on the internet and on the blogs and post things about people and about the agency that don't necessarily have to be true, especially when they do it under the name of anonymous or any other name, and it becomes a fact of record, at least on the internet, that you have to prove otherwise, and it puts you on the defense. And a lot of people don't want to come to the support of the agency, regardless if they believe in the chief or if they believe in the organization, what's happening there, all the good things, because they know they may be the target of the bullies. So they just kind of stick their head in the sand and go about their daily business, hoping the black cloud will soon pass, and as it eventually does. But you can't measure the damage that you've incurred when things like that happen. If the fire service would stand up and say, we're not going to accept this anymore, we're a proud industry, we're a proud profession that's been here for years, and our organization is strong and proud, and we do good for our community and the people that come and visit with us, we're not going to accept it. We're tired of hearing it, but until the fire service stands up and accepts that personal responsibility to call their members who are acting out, out on the front line and say, we're not going to accept this anymore, reputation management is going to continue to be a hurdle for the fire service.
Chad, do you ever run into any issues about, Billy talks about the bully anonymous on the internet, and if you wouldn't have to spend much time in any website that has a means by which you can post anonymous comments to know that there are some very mean-spirited people out there. Do you ever run into the situation, Chad, where people, firefighters say, well, that's my right. You know, I have a First Amendment right to say whatever I want to say. And if I don't believe in what my organization is doing, I have a right to be able to say what I want. And they can't do anything about it. And do you ever run into that kind of belief among people that you're working with?
Absolutely. Most recently, 48 hours ago, I had that exact same conversation with a fire captain who said, literally, look, I'm a union steward in my day job, and my job is to speak up for what I believe, and if that means going to the press, that's what I'll do. And we sat down with him and with the chief, and we had a hard conversation about what it means to be a leader in this agency and to support this agency, and that a leader's job is, yes, to participate in the legitimate decision-making process. And that means within the chain of command, but to participate appropriately in the decision-making process. And then when a legitimate decision is made, to get behind it and to execute it 100%. And that is incompatible with exercising your First Amendment right. Yes, that is your right as a citizen, but as a member of the organization, you have a higher duty to support that organization publicly and to do so with one voice and consistently. And that's what it really comes down to, is saying, look, no one is suspending your rights. What we are doing is saying, when you took that oath, when you put on that red hat or that white hat, or when you put on the hat of the organization at any role, you agreed to be supportive of that organization and that profession. And that means that you have to be responsible with your words as well as your deeds. And it's a very tough conversation to have, but it's a very important one to have.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's a conversation that needs to be had more often. Now, the problem is, as Billy had noted, is that in this world of anonymous, access to post whatever you want to say, and just be, as Billy said, firefighter 107 doesn't really give us an opportunity to deal with, using Billy's terms, the bully. My term would be the snipers, mm-hmm. that are trying to damage the organization's reputation. As much as we're out there trying to protect the organization's reputation, these people are out there maliciously trying to bring harm to the organization. Now, maybe they feel it's their only way to get redress for the wrongs that they have endured, but their method, it does not justify the potential damage that it can cause to the organization. They're very short-sighted, or maybe they just don't care what harm they cause.
Well, and this is Chad. I want to agree with that. I also want to point out one of the great points that Billy made earlier about bullying is it happens internally, too. It can take an enormous amount of courage for someone to raise their hand and say, you know what, we're not living up to our standards, or the chief's standards are right. We are trying to become a better agency, and that means we all have to step up. To do that requires enormous courage, because there are invariably going to be bullies in the fire service who are going to say, just shut up and go sit by your bowl, or you know what, we know what's best for our station, our crew, our squad, our battalion, not the chief. And so it takes tremendous courage for someone to stand up among their peers and among their buddies and say what they know is right.
This is Steve. This discussion that we've been having here in just the last couple minutes really is one of the most difficult areas that we have about reputation management. And that's, of course, the social media policy and those that are unfairly, in many cases, attacking fire departments from behind a screen name. But I would point out to you because that this is the leader's toolbox, and we're talking about not only these difficult problems, but there are many, many reputation management issues that can be addressed by the leadership. We talked about seatbelts and some analogies a little while ago about seatbelt wearing. We all know that if you want to have a successful safety policy, officers must be engaged in having folks wear seatbelts. Well, I would propose to you that officers need to be and leaders need to be engaged in reputation management from the lowest common denominator. For instance, what fire department should not have a background check on its members? And I'm not talking about just volunteer fire departments. I'm talking about some career fire departments do not do a sufficient background check on the members before they get in. So people with questionable backgrounds, some of them even criminal, are routinely permitted to join a fire department when a very simple background check would have raised the awareness that this probably is not a person that you want to bring into a fire department that would have the ability to go into somebody's home on an emergency. There are other issues that leaders can take without much effort. For instance, why would you not have an annual audit or financial review done at your fire department, your union local, your volunteer association? Why would that not be audited every year? Why wouldn't there be some financial safeguards for those people that handle money to protect them and also protect your organization? And we see time and time again that fire departments are subject to embezzlement. Just looked at an incident recently where a fire chief and his wife, the wife being the secretary to the fire department, embezzled thousands upon thousands of dollars from the department. So there are many things that are not nearly as complicated as dealing with social policy, where you can take action now as a leader to protect the good name of your fire department.
Yeah, good point, Steve. And you know, Billy, when you were talking about the hiring practices, it made me think of Jim Collins' book Good to Great, when he talks about getting the right people on the bus is his analogy to that. And you and Steve both, and Chad as well, have spoken to the need to make sure that the organization is bringing the right people in. And let's acknowledge that that doesn't eliminate the possibility of having something go wrong and have a reputation management issue arise, but the more due diligence that you show up front in vetting the potential members of the organization And then the safeguards that you build in, like Steve talked about, you know, an audit procedure, an organization, and I know a few that have gotten into challenges for financial reasons, the same as you mentioned, Steve, to not have an audit procedure inviting the possibility of a potential problem. And in fact, Chad, would you say it would be, I don't exactly know how to word the question, the person who handles the money in the organization should be the first in line to want to have an audit? Is that a good example of displaying ethical leadership?
Yeah, it's probably a red flag if the people that are responsible for the money are reluctant to accept oversight and advice, or frankly, you know, it's common sense among managers across industries. You know, if they're reluctant to take a vacation, there are in financial areas. Steve's point is particularly well taken. There are already sound best practices for the administration of public funds as well as for corporate funds. They follow one another very, very closely. And if the people who are responsible for the money aren't embracing those best practices, that's something that really needs to change. That's low-hanging fruit, and it's just sound management as well as leadership.
You know, when I was funny, you'd mentioned the vacation, Chad. I hadn't really thought about this for many, many years in my life. But when I was early in my life, I worked in a bank, and one of the things that they required was that you take a vacation. And it wasn't that they were interested in your mental well-being; they wanted you gone so that they, you know, if you were doing something that that you were, you know, had to actively work to cover up, that such things would come out, you know, while you were on vacation, and they forced you to take your time off, even if you said, no, you know, I really don't want a vacation. Yeah, no, you're taking a vacation because that gives us an opportunity to see things that might surface while you're gone. That's interesting. I just kind of had a flashback to my younger years. Steve, what things do you want to say in closing on the topic of reputation management? We've been at this about an hour on the podcast, and we want to be respectful of folks' time. So I'll give you a chance to say a few words in closing.
Well, it's not a new phenomenon in the fire service, unfortunately. I wish that, you know, we could pin it down and say it's a generational thing. I just have open here before me the June 1957 edition of Fire Engineering, and I see in Gastonian, North Carolina, on May the 8th of 1957, a firefighter attempted to hold up the bank, having financial problems. His fire chief said at the time he was a good firefighter, but he was physically sick at the news that this member had done such a deed. Obviously, that was a big issue for Gastonia, North Carolina, and for the people that read that, maybe in fire engineering. But this is something that we've had to deal with for years, but we just haven't been talking about it as much as we should. So we're going to talk some more at Cumberland Valley about it. We've got good support, not only volunteers in our name, but we've got great support from the Career Fire Service and also those in labor that support this the white paper. We've launched a Facebook page, Firefighter Behavior, will be closely linked with our website, and we're interested in people sharing their success stories, really, on how their department has either handled a difficult situation or safeguards they've put forward to prevent poor behavior of affecting the reputation of their department. So I really appreciate Chad's comments here today from outside the fire service that, you know, people get it and understand what we're faced with. And certainly Chief Hayes, who's lived some very, very difficult situations and had to deal with them in one of our country's major metro fire departments in his career, and will continue in his role at Southern University to address these issues. And Rich, thanks to you and Firehouse for bringing this really important issue to the forefront. And hopefully we will continue to impress upon the leaders of America's Fire Service that fire department reputation management is should be on the front burner of their activities day in and day out.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Steve, for those words that kind of put a wrap to this conversation. We have been dealing with fire service reputation management on this podcast. I'd like to take an opportunity to thank Billy Hayes, the Director of Military and Corporate Special Programs at Columbia Southern University. Billy, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Gassaway.
And Dr. Chad Weinstein, the president of Ethical Leaders in Action, a training and consulting group that is doing some really neat things with fire departments in the area of ethical leadership. And Chad, I'll just give you a chance to throw this buzz line out, because you had told me that somebody was commenting about how you do ethical leadership training. It's ethics without something. I can't remember what it was and who told it to you, but about do you remember when we had that conversation?
Absolutely. It was the chief of the St. Paul Police Department, and he said, "Oh, you do ethics without the thou shalt not."
yeah, that and I have attended your program, and I have to tell you that I don't think as ethics as a previously to meeting you, I never thought of ethics as a topic that would be enjoyable to participate in, or that could have humor attached to it. It was just all based on the fact that all of my ethics training was very bland and very thou shalt not, and your approach to this whole topic is tremendously refreshing, and it reflects in the feedback that I get when I have you in as a guest on my program. So thanks for sharing your perspective with us here as well.
Thank you. I'm honored and humbled by those comments, and I'm also really grateful to have spent the time with my fellow presenters who really know this stuff as knowledgeable, committed, seasoned leaders and insiders. I've learned a lot from the discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad to have you along with us. Steve, the Cumberland Valley group has just been on the forefront of addressing some of the most pressing issues in the fire service. Their work with responder safety is top-notch stuff, and I just have to tip my hat to that organization and the dedication of the people there to try to make a difference, to make a better fire service. So we really appreciate everything that you are doing.
Thanks, Rich. We appreciate that. You know, there's not very many regional fire associations left in this country. We may be the last of the Mohicans, if you will, but we're going to be around for at least another 110 years, and when these tough situations come forward, we're going to address them.
Well, and we appreciate that. This is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway, and our topic was fire service reputation management. If you have some feedback, there will be a link at the bottom of the player page for you to provide your feedback. We'll also put links to Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firefighters Association, Columbia Southern University, and Ethical Leaders in Action if you want to check into the work that any of our guest are participating in on a regular basis, that'll be your opportunity to do that. Until we talk again, please stay safe and keep your organization dialed in on being strong in your ethical leadership and setting a good reputation in your community and beyond. Thank you.
The best way to learn a new skill or improve upon one you already have is to actually put it into practice. Choose from 6 hands-on training classes at Firehouse World 2011 in San Diego this coming February. Classes include trench rescue, firefighter survival, air management, extrication, and more. Learn by doing. Complete details available at firehouseworld.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.